Section 1. Georgia's Response to School Integration. When the United States entered World War II, African-American poet Langston Hughes predicted that the war would change race relations in America. He wrote, "Pearl Harbor put Jim Crow on the run," indicating that a nation fighting for democracy could not continue to treat its people unequally. Hughes was disappointed that the war did not lead to immediate changes despite the courageous service of African Americans. However, progress was being made. Some efforts for civil rights originated from the national government. Presidential executive orders brought about some changes, and decisions from federal district courts and the U.S. Supreme Court also shaped the movement. Although the enforcement of these changes was not always effective, by 1965, the legal framework for a more integrated society was established, marking the end of the Jim Crow era. Harry Truman and Civil Rights. During the New Deal, African Americans benefited from jobs and programs, but no laws protected their civil rights. Things began to change under President Harry Truman. Truman had a history of opposing the Ku Klux Klan, KKK, in his home state of Missouri. After World War II, he established the Committee on Civil Rights to study the challenges faced by African Americans and recommend changes. Because passing a civil rights law through Congress was challenging, Truman acted independently. In 1948, he ordered the desegregation, ending the practice of segregating the races, of the U.S. military and federal government offices. This was an important step toward equality. In the South, where segregation remained legal, military bases became places where black and white soldiers lived and worked together. With Georgia hosting many military bases, this marked a significant change for the state. However, black soldiers could not dine in the same restaurants or attend the same theaters as white soldiers when they were off the military bases. At the same time, the Democratic Party became divided over civil rights. While national Democratic leaders supported full civil rights for African Americans, many Southern Democrats strongly opposed the idea. In 1948, some Southern Democrats left the party and formed the States' Rights Democratic Party, also known as the Dixiecrats. Although Truman was unable to pass civil rights laws, the courts began making decisions that favored civil rights during his presidency. The NAACP and the fight for civil rights. Since its founding in 1909, the NAACP, or National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, worked to challenge discrimination and segregation in the courts. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that some state and local laws violated the rights of African Americans, but many unfair practices persisted. Though the court had ruled in 1915 that grandfather clauses were unconstitutional, other barriers, such as literacy tests and white primaries, still prevented most black citizens from voting. In 1917, the court ruled that laws creating separate black and white neighborhoods were illegal. Yet segregation persisted as white homeowners refused to sell to African Americans. The NAACP also focused on education, arguing that separate black schools were not equal to white schools. Courts ruled that states had to admit black students to white graduate schools if they failed to provide equal facilities. Southern states, including Georgia, attempted to improve black schools instead of ending segregation. In 1949, Governor Herman Talmadge established the Minimum Foundation Program to enhance school funding, particularly for black students. In 1951, Georgia enacted a 3% sales tax to support education. However, Talmadge and other leaders aimed to maintain school segregation. They even considered closing all public schools rather than allowing black and white students to attend together. Brown v. Board of Education. The NAACP played a significant role in the landmark Supreme Court case, Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas. Thurgood Marshall, aided by Atlanta-born lawyer James Neybert, Jr., argued that segregated schools harmed black children's education and well-being. The Brown case was based on the argument that black children were receiving an unequal education, which violated their civil rights under the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It was easy to demonstrate that, for African Americans, student funding was unequal, teacher pay was lower, and school buildings, classrooms, and textbooks were substandard. The NAACP presented research that showed that segregation harmed the psychological and social well-being of children. The NAACP argued that simply improving school buildings and equalizing funding would not be enough. In 1954, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the doctrine of separate but equal was unconstitutional. This doctrine had originated from the 1896 Plessy v. Ferguson decision. The justices in 1954 said segregation created inequality, violating the 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection of the laws. In 1955, the court issued a second ruling, Brown II, instructing schools to desegregate with all deliberate speed. This decision required the end of segregation in public schools and represented a major victory in the civil rights movement. Although the court had ordered an end to segregated schools, Georgia's leaders found ways to slow the process. The 1956 Georgia State Flag. Many people in Georgia and the South strongly opposed desegregation. Even before the Supreme Court ruling, the Georgia legislature passed a law in 1953 that allowed the state to close public schools rather than integrate them. Since private schools could remain segregated, enrollment in these schools increased as whites who could afford the tuition moved their children to private schools. In 1956, white Southern members of the U.S. Senate and House wrote the Southern Manifesto, attacking the Brown decision as being unconstitutional and an attack on the rights of states. Many vocal white politicians called for the protection of white supremacy, states' rights, and the Southern way of life. In another act of defiance, the state legislature passed a law in February 1956 changing the Georgia state flag. The head of the state Democratic Party had proposed the idea, and two state senators introduced the legislation. According to the Georgia Constitution, the legislature determined the state flag design with no public vote. Much of the new state flag featured the Confederate battle flag known as the St. Andrew's Cross. The left section of the flag displayed the state seal on a vertical blue background. State Representative Denmark Groover stated at the time that it would show that we in Georgia intend to uphold what we stood for. The flag became increasingly controversial in the 1990s, leading African Americans and business leaders to seek its change. Shortly before his death in 2001, Groover returned to the House chambers to acknowledge that opposition to desegregation had motivated the call for a flag change. He urged the legislature to adopt a new flag. Despite efforts by Governor Zell Miller to alter the flag, it was the initiative of his successor, Governor Roy Barnes, that finally resulted in a new flag. The current Georgia flag was officially adopted in 2004 when voters selected its design over that of the Barnes flag. More opposition to Brown v. Board of Education. Governors Herman Talmadge, Marvin Griffin, and Ernest Vandiver insisted that black and white students would never attend school together in Georgia. The state legislature passed laws attempting to prevent desegregation, even declaring that the Brown decision did not apply in Georgia. When schools in Little Rock, Arkansas integrated in 1957, President Eisenhower sent troops to protect black students. Meanwhile, Georgia's leaders vowed to maintain segregated schools. In 1955, the KKK became active again in Georgia, holding rallies at Stone Mountain and committing acts of violence against civil rights supporters. Many white Georgians feared losing their way of life under segregation and were concerned about competition from black individuals for jobs. Some white leaders, particularly religious figures like Rabbi Jacob Rothschild of Atlanta, advocated for civil rights. In 1958, his synagogue was bombed due to his support for racial equality. Governor Vandeveer, and the Sibley Commission. In 1959, a federal court ordered Atlanta to desegregate its public schools, and state leaders vowed to close them. A group of primarily white mothers formed HOPE, or Help Our Public Education, to oppose school closures. Atlanta's business leaders were also concerned, fearing that defying the Supreme Court and shutting down schools would harm Atlanta's reputation and discourage businesses and investors from coming to the city. Mayor William B. Hartsfield supported desegregation to safeguard the city's economy. Georgia Governor Ernest Vandeveer refused to close Georgia's schools. He established a special group called the Sibley Commission to examine the issue and gather public opinion. Attorney and banker John Sibley led the commission, traveling throughout Georgia to listen to citizens. Most white Georgians who spoke at the meetings wanted to maintain school segregation. Some even favored closing schools rather than integrating them. However, urban and business leaders opposed school closures due to concerns about the economic impact. The Sibley Commission recommended that local school boards determine whether to integrate or close their schools. In 1961, Atlanta desegregated its schools peacefully. In other cities, such as Augusta, desegregation took longer. A lawsuit called the Acree case compelled the courts to intervene and develop a plan for more meaningful integration, bringing people of different racial or other groups into society or an organization as equals. Although many in Georgia resisted desegregation, the efforts of civil rights activists, business leaders, court rulings, and the softening of Governor Vandeveer's views contributed to a gradual integration of the state's public schools.